Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff with your host, Gregory Neesmith. Like we do about this time every week, it's high noon, or around there, about, at the home of the Gregory Neesmith Show, WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. And, you know, we get into a couple of the uns here, the unavoidable, the unbelievable, the unjust, the underrated, uninhibited, you know, the uns. I like to get personal about what's going on in the news and culture. And as always, to take you on that journey is your host, Gregory Neesmith, entrepreneur, content creator, consultant, certified coach, a bunch of stuff. But when it's all said and done, I'm into exploring how as underdogs do we get our swagger back in life and in business. And grateful to be able to go on that journey with you every Sunday here at WATR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Today's episode, let's just get into it. Episode 80. You ever done something 80 times? It never quite feels like you're going to get to 80, 90, 100. You know, the first one, the second one, the third one, the 10th one, the 90th one, 20th one. But now all of a sudden we've done this 80 times and I can't believe it. Grateful that you have wanted to go on that journey, and we'll do it again for the 80th time today, and hopefully many more to come. Today's episode, I'm not quite sure what I want to call it. There's a couple things dancing around in my mind today. I thought about this theme of this idea of what they say, what they say, what they do. You know, the infamous and famous they said that ain't going to work out. They said Trump couldn't be president. They said you can't have your own radio show in New York City, Gregory. They said this. They said that. Who's they? We're going to talk about some of the things that they be saying and get into whether it's for show, you know, for show or for substance. Is it style? Is it substance? Is it for show or is it for strategy? We'll get into it today. I think that's what's been on my mind. And of course, you can let me know what's on your mind. What they say, for show, for substance. I don't talk about it often. I should probably talk about it a little more. But before I became a full-time entrepreneur about 3 years ago and started playing in the space of business consulting, leadership coaching, and content creating, writing articles, hosting radio shows, podcasting, and so forth, creating workshops. One of the things I did for 16 years, sweet 16, man, was brand management, general management, marketing, strategy, innovation for Kraft Foods, which would eventually morph into a company called Mondelez International, which was a collection of think manufacturers and brands like Cadbury, Kraft Foods, and Nabisco, all mixed up into one, and they gave it a random name called Mondelez International. And I helped run businesses and turn teams around and businesses around there, both in the U.S. and also around the globe. And it was probably one of the first experiences where I started to get real perplexed and curious about this idea of what they say. Right. We all hear people say, well, they said it's going to be a hot summer. Well, who's they? Was it the Farmer's Almanac? Was it a weatherman? It was just a friend of a friend. They say the two-party system works. Well, who's they? They say we're the greatest country on the planet. Shout out to Let Your Voice Be Heard, who was discussing, are we as America still a superpower or not? Is that good or not? But, you know, people say they say we're greatest country on earth. I don't know who they is, because every time I look at those lists of top places to get an education in the world, America's not number one. Most fit citizens. Every time I look at those surveys, America's not number one. Amount of debt or ability to save. America might be number one in debt, but not number one in saving. So all they say we're number one, and then every time I look at some list, some rankings, America's hardly ever number one, but they say, yeah. But I digress. So I'm at work. I'm doing my career thing, corporate career. And I'll never forget, one of the things when you're a junior person is you can't wait to become more senior in the company because you want to be able to be the decision maker. The one who gets to say, this is how it's going down. Put this person here. Make this product that way. Go after this consumer. Let's launch in this country. Let's merge with this. You're like, man, I can't wait to make that happen. And one of the more sexier things in business, especially when you're in marketing, is being able to launch a new product. And I know a lot of folks can relate, even if you haven't launched a new product in your current business career, a lot of folks who listen to the show, a lot of underdogs, have side hustles or new ventures that they're starting. So you are in the journey of launching something. And it's exhilarating and it's nerve-wracking and there's a lot of doubt and excitement and a lot of stuff going on. So I remember being a junior marketer going, I can't wait to be like a brand manager or a director, have a team, but I can't wait the most to launch a new product. Oh, it's going to be amazing. And so I remember hearing that they would say one of the important things, the thing that seemed to always get a lot of attention, was the new advertising campaign that was going to announce the launch of whatever the new product was. And I remember thinking, it'll be so cool. I'll be hanging with those ad folks on Madison Avenue, figuring out what the new creative is going to be. I'm going to get to go on some commercial shoot somewhere halfway around the world. I'm going to launch some 30-second ad, and I'm going to be famous. The ad's going to be awesome. I'm going to win some awards. It's going to be amazing. Because when it was time for a new product to launch, that's all I kept hearing was, who's going to be the agency? What's the 30-second and 15-second spots going to be? What's the ad campaign going to be? And can we win some awards, too? So you can tell your mama, tell your friends and them, like, hey, turn on your TV. Turn to CNN at 2:15. My commercial's coming on. They used to say, like, that was the big deal. And so, of course, I'm thinking, cool, I can't wait to launch a new product and have a new ad campaign, too. And then reality hit. And this is where we get into this idea of what's for show and what's for substance. Lo and behold, I'm running a business now. I got to worry about revenue, cost, profits, market share, making sure the big business is working and the new product is working. So let's give an example. I'm working on a coffee brand. Kraft had brands like Maxwell House Coffee, General Foods International Coffee, at one point Post Cereal, other brands like that, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese. So let's use an example that people can probably relate to. At some point, folks have probably had some Maxwell House coffee. And let's say you're going to launch a new line of Maxwell House coffee. Let's make up that we're going to launch some new dark roasted coffee. And you're like, man, I can't wait to come up with the ad campaign for this coffee, this new brand, this new product. Oh my goodness, it's going to be awesome, amazing, for sure. And then when you realize, I realize I'm running a business, and I'm like, they have at best overstated the importance of having an awesome commercial to launch your product. And at worst, somebody lied to me. I don't think lied to me. It might be a little aggressive there, but because when you're running a business, you realize that actually when you're going to launch a new product, the show, the style, the shiny object is the advertising. And then when you get into the nuts and bolts of running a business, you realize that it's probably fourth or fifth on the most important things to do to have a successful product launch. And I'm not just talking about if you work for some big company. If you're about to launch your side hustle's new product or new service, it applies to this too, in a way. So I worked in consumer packaged goods. And so if I'm going to launch a new coffee flavor under the Maxwell House brand, for example, just using that as an example so you can follow along an actual real product, the new advertising campaign for that is really like fourth, fifth, sixth most important thing. It turns out one of the most important things, the substance, is distribution. In the first year of a launch of a new product, one of the most important things is how many stores have agreed to shelve and put your product in their stores. And I'm like, when I was a junior marketer, they kept talking about this, these commercials, and nobody was really spending a lot of time talking about distribution. It wasn't a shiny object. And then I'm running a business, and I'm like, man, okay, cool. I thought advertising was this big deal, but looks like I should probably make sure I'm listed in as many stores as possible so someone can actually go buy the product. Then I find out one of the next most important things is like, how much money am I spending to raise awareness about the new product? Both spending money in the store to get displays and signage, spending money outside the store, billboards, commercials, and things like that. But how much money am I spending to actually announce and reach more people so they know to go get that product that I said I'm launching, that new dark roast from Maxwell House, as an example? Then another thing was making sure that whatever I say the product is, that it delivers. So that dark roast better taste like a dark roast, or else my year one launch might not go that well. So I'm like, God damn it. All this time they been telling me about, oh my goodness, the big deals, the advertising campaign and the commercials and the show, the style. And it turns out, if you had to rank variables that are most linked to success of launching your new product or service in year one, it turns out that everybody's talking about the big shiny object, the big commercial that you can go watch on CBS or NBC. And then it turns out the reality is that, yeah, it's cool and all, and it does have value and importance, but it's more show and style than it is substance. Because guess what? That commercial won't mean a thing, in this example, if my product isn't in as many stores as possible so that someone can actually buy the product. If the product doesn't taste like it's described, there's not a product concept fit, there's an issue. And then even if I have this ad, if I don't have any money to spend behind it, then nobody's even going to see the ad or know that the product's even available in all those stores that I hopefully got it in. And I share that long roundabout story as a personal example about how sometimes I've been caught up in style over substance by listening to what they say. They said civility matters right now, like the new buzzword for the past, I don't know, 4 to 6, 8 weeks. We need to bring civility back. We need more statesmen and stateswomen. Donald Trump has eroded our sensibilities and our civility. And I hear a lot of folks who seem to lean to the left, seem to be liberal, conservative, liberals, Democrats, progressives, bunch of different titles, but folks who lean more left and right, talking about civility. For show. For style. I'm not feeling it because I don't think there's much substance behind it. civility has gotten the Democrats since 2008 or so. I think around the time when Barack Obama won the White House for the first of his two terms. Since then, civility has gotten the Democrats about 70 losses of seats in the House of Representatives. Lost about 10 governorships since then in the United States. And about 10 Senate seats. They keep saying, I and you and me should be worried about civility. And I'm thinking, how about worrying about winning elections? Folks over here talking to me about commercials when I was in corporate America. How about talking to me about distribution? Spending, product concept fit, strategies and tactics, not stuff that's for show. Civility for show versus substance. Like having strategy and tactics. Like the Republicans over the past few years having strategies of let's win locally so that we can then start to win statewide and nationally. And then tactics like gerrymandering. Tactics like starting to fill the circuit courts with judges that are in the spirit of their conservative ideology. Democrats talking civility, while the Republicans now are talking strategy and tactics. And oh, by the way, while we're talking about civility, Donald Trump's about to put a second person that he chooses on the Supreme Court. But we want to talk about style instead of substance. Speaking of Supreme Court, I saw a clever headline that someone said, Brett Kavanaugh, yes, or Brett Kavanaugh. I thought that was clever because Brett Kavanaugh is Donald Trump's latest Supreme Court justice nominee. And this guy has been a judge on the D.C. Court of Appeals since 2006. Graduated from Yale Law School in 1990, was part of the investigations into Bill Clinton back in the 90s. Also at one point was part of George W. Bush's White House as counsel and staff secretary. And of course, he became nationally known last week when Donald Trump did this.
Judge Kavanaugh has impeccable credentials, unsurpassed qualifications, and a proven commitment to equal justice under the law. A graduate of Yale College and Yale Law School, Judge Kavanaugh currently teaches at Harvard, Yale, and Georgetown. Throughout legal circles, he is considered a judge's judge, a true thought leader among his peers. He is a brilliant jurist with a clear and effective writing style, universally regarded as one of the finest and sharpest legal minds of our time. And just like Justice Gorsuch, he excelled as a clerk for Justice Kennedy.
Hey, style or substance for show or for substance? I used to think that commercials, when launching new products, was the biggest deal in the world. That's what they said. Then reality hit, and I learned that really having a successful product launch is about strategy and tactics and substance. How many stores is your product in? How many people know about your service? How much money do you have to get the word out? Is what you say about your product or service actually come to life when people get to experience it? Is there a product and concept fit? Substance over your 30-second commercial, which is for show. For show, I'm going to be more civil going forward. Maxine Waters, how dare she rile up people and tell them to push back? She's not being civil. Oh, you mean like the civility of separating kids at the border from their parents? Or you mean civility like folks who are part of the temporary protection status programs, like folks we brought over from Haiti after certain natural disasters? They've been here for years and decades, and now we're saying that program is done under the Trump administration and they're going to be sent back to Haiti when they've been documented here and being citizens contributing to this country? That's civility, right? No, that's substance. Substance I don't like, but it's happening. And we out here talking about 30-second commercials and civility. Brett Kavanaugh is coming. Gonna be here soon.
Mr. President, thank you. Throughout this process, I've witnessed firsthand your appreciation for the vital role of the American judiciary. No president has ever consulted more widely or talked with more people from more backgrounds to seek input about a Supreme Court nomination. Mr. President, I am grateful to you, and I'm humbled by your confidence in me.
Yo, you humbled? I'm horrified. All right, I got a beef to pick with the Democrats on this. And I'll get to it in a second. As you can imagine, the Republicans are lining up behind Trump. They're going, yeah, man, Brett Kavanaugh, that's our dude. We about to take the court. Oh, did I mention while the Democrats are talking about civility, the Republicans have, some would argue, gerrymandered their way to a majority in the House of Representatives, a majority in the Senate. Obviously, the executive branch is either one party or the other. So they have the majority now, one zip in the executive branch, having the president. And probably in about 66 days or so, I saw it reported in NPR that the last two Supreme Court nominations averaged about 66 days, so a little over 2 months. So in about 2 months from now, it's likely that Brett Kavanaugh will be a Supreme Court justice, and the way they describe these justices, they say some lean left, some lean right, and Brett Kavanaugh will tip the nine justices, that five out of the nine will be seen as more right-leaning than left. And so that means while the Democrats are talking civility, the Republicans are dominating our government in all three branches. Like I said, it reminds me of my corporate days when folks were telling me that the big deal when you launch something new, whether it's your side hustles, your main hustle, your big product, your services, oh, what's your fancy ad going to be? It didn't matter if you didn't have money to spend, if you didn't have a product concept fit, and it didn't matter if your product wasn't available for people to buy. And it kind of reminds me of this whole idea of Democrats talking civility, and yet they can't really make anything happen right now. But they out here talking. Let's go down a list of some of the Democrats talking about this Brett Kavanaugh thing as an example. Who's up first? I think we'll stick in New York State for a second. Is this Mr. Chuck?
President Trump took a step that millions of Americans feared he would take, and nominated to the Supreme Court someone who would fill his campaign promise to overturn Roe and declare health care for Americans unconstitutional.
Chuck Schumer talking about health care. Who's up next? Let's have another Democrat say something bad about Brett Kavanaugh. Who's up next? Let's pick the person who is likely a candidate to run for president in the Democratic Party in 2020. Let's go with Kay Harris. What's she saying?
If confirmed, he would be among the most conservative justices in Supreme Court history. His views are outside the mainstream, and there's every reason to believe he would overturn Roe.
That's Senator Feinstein. But let's get Kay Harris up to bat, because she may end up running for president.
If you are a young woman in America, the reality, or you care about a young woman in America, pay close attention to this nomination. Pay close attention. Because Kavanaugh has made his purpose clear. He told us that when he was on that list of 25. He has told us that in every decision that he has made on the issue of choice. And let's be clear about what this is about. It's about government taking on the decision about a woman and what she does with her body, instead of giving that woman and her family and her God the power to make the decision for herself.
With all due respect, and speaking of what they say, whenever somebody says with all due respect, you know they might be about to say something that might be borderline disrespectful. But with all due respect, or maybe I'll go with the first of all, what we not going to do, just phrases that I love to, I don't get to say them that often. There's really not many times when I just, but anyway, with all due respect, Chuck Schumer, I believe Ms. Feinstein, and to Kamala Harris, I'm not buying what you're selling. This feels like for show or style over for substance. Do you know what it takes to get a Supreme Court nominee approved? The president gets to pick, and the Senate gets to consult and confirm. And do you know how many votes it takes for the Senate to consent and confirm a nominee like Brett Kavanaugh? Just takes 51 votes. Simple majority. 51 out of the 100. If they say yay, then it's Brett Kavanaugh. Yes, not Brett Kavanaugh. See what I did there? And guess how many Republicans are in the Senate? About 51. So if all the Republicans vote for Brett Kavanaugh, which is very likely, then Brett Kavanaugh would be the next Supreme Court justice, and the court will tip, as many have reported, more to the right than to the left. And so, yo, who am I, right? I'm just some dude on a radio in Harlem with some coaching experience and 16 years of experience running businesses around the world and locally. But maybe it's just me. But if Brett Kavanaugh is not going to become the next Supreme Court justice, you kind of got to get Republican senators not to vote for him. Republican senators, not Democrats. So this is the for show part to me. You heard Feinstein and Harris and Chuck Schumer talking about abortion, Roe Wade and Affordable Care, and Brett Kavanaugh could set us back on all those issues. But guess what? The Republicans have already spoken. Republican voters elected senators and the president to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Now, I know. A lot of Republican voters didn't realize that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act were the same thing. That's an aside. But they elected their senators and Donald Trump to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They elected Donald Trump and those senators to put Supreme Court justices like Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court to potentially chip away at abortion and Roe Wade in America. And so let me just give you a quick pro tip. You don't convince people to do something by appealing to ideas that they are against and the people who voted them in are against. So this is for show. Guess what? Schumer, Camilla, Faza, it doesn't matter that he's against potentially abortion rights and healthcare rights, because that's not going to be why 51 or some of those Republican senators won't vote for him. You got to go find some issues that matter to those senators and to their voters to maybe get them to say, you know what? Maybe I'm going to chill out on this Brett Kavanaugh. And it won't be because of abortion or Affordable Care Act. You got to find some holes in the armor that actually matter to Republican voters and Republican senators. But again, hey, I'm just some dude on the radio. What do I know? Just seems like common sense. So I went digging. What are some of the issues that Brett Kavanaugh might be a little bit vulnerable on that actually might get a Republican senator to be like, nah, I'm good. I'm a pass. Let's get somebody else. You got to find stuff that Republican senators and voters care about, not what Democrat voters care about, or at least find something that appeals to both. So I went digging. I found something. Chuck Schumer, Kamala Harris, Feinstein, Democrats, if you're listening, about to give you some free consulting here. Pay me later. So on the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, rights to privacy, Brett Kavanaugh is a little soft. You know, new technology creates new government surveillance opportunities. You got the collection of telephone metadata, thermal imaging, GPS tracking, that all are threats to the privacy of us, you and me. Especially us underdogs out here. Especially if you might be brown or black, too. Gets a little hectic out here with the police. And it seems Brett Kavanaugh is likely to agree and side with allowing the government to do more monitoring of us as opposed to less. Now, of course, the Fourth Amendment is supposed to guarantee us free from government intrusion into our homes and our private lives unless there's a warrant. But it seems Brett's not really feeling that whole warrant thing. In 2015, Brett Kavanaugh went out of his way to minimize these protections. In 2010, he said that attaching a GPS device to a car without a warrant was constitutional. What? That car's mine. Ain't that my private property? And Brett's like, no, I think the government should be able to put a GPS tracker on your stuff. Not good. In 2008, he said unzipping a jacket without permission and without probable cause or a warrant was okay. Well, that ain't good. That the government is allowed to get our data and phone records from the phone companies. How about the Democrats talking about his assault on the Fourth Amendment? How about the Democrats talking about that he believes that the executive branch should have certain powers? Trump always out here acting like a dictator. Appeal to the Republicans and their voters that this new Supreme Court pick could be dangerous to our rights of privacy, private property, all those things like that. Maybe someone like Rand Paul, who's a libertarian, might say, you know what? The public pressure, you highlighting these things, I might have to be like a no. Maybe some of these other moderate Republicans be like, you know what? We want to protect the rights of our citizens. We don't want the executive branch and the state to have all these unlimited powers. We want to keep our freedom because we know we can't trust ourselves and we definitely can't trust this government. Appeal to those militias, those white nationalists. All's fair in love and war. I'm just saying, Democrats talking about abortion rights and the Affordable Care Act as reasons why Brett Kavanaugh is a threat to our country. In this case, it doesn't really matter because that's not going to be why those Republican senators, at least a couple of those 51, might say no to Brett. It might be because of something like maybe the Fourth Amendment and privacy and power. For show or for substance. Sometimes folks out here saying stuff for show, but substantively, it doesn't really move the dial. It doesn't really make a difference. Like I said, growing up in corporate America, I thought having a big time ad and commercial and campaign was a big deal when I was launching something new. Turns out, for show, the substance was how much distribution did I have? How many people knew I had a product out there? Did the product deliver on its quality? Those were the most important things. Democrats out here talking about civility, for show. The substance is, are they winning any gerrymandering cases? Are they winning any local or state elections? Can the Democrats stop being losers and talking about civility? Since 2008, about 70 House seats lost, about 10 Senate seats lost, 10 governorships lost, the White House too. But we talking about civility, for sure. But it ain't for much substance, because looks like there's about to be a new Supreme Court justice that leans to the Republican side while the Democrats out here talking about civility. All this strategy talks got me a little down, because all this for show stuff doesn't give you strategy, tactics, and results. It's both humbling and exciting and surreal all at the same time that the podcast of this show launched in January 2017, and a year and a half later, we're around 19,000 downloads, and sometime this summer, likely next month, September at the latest, we'll cross the 20,000 download mark because of you. Talking underdog stuff. And still hard for me to put into perspective that something that didn't exist a year and a half ago, now almost 20 downloads later, 80th episode happening right now. It's crazy. And it's actually a reminder of today's theme, this idea of what they say and for show or for substance. I remember for almost 3 decades of my life. I'm 42 now. I'll be 43 in November. 11/22, November 22nd. But since I was a little kid, around 10 or so years old, I dreamed of having a radio show. And for a long time, all I did was talk about dreaming of having a radio show. That was the show, the style. But the substance of it was that I didn't really have a plan. I didn't have a show. And I'll never forget when my good friend said, it's one thing to talk about having a show, the style, the for show, the talk. And he said, there's another thing about having one. And I'll never forget, he said it so matter-of-factly. He said, to have a show, you got to have a show. To have a show, you got to have a show. And it sounds so simplistic as I say it now, but it has such profound effect on me of this idea of I will never have a show, or at least a show I dream of, which is to be a nationally, well, actually globally syndicated talk radio and TV show. That's the dream. And my friend was like, that's all well and good, but the substance of it all is you got to have a show to ever have a shot at having that show be globally syndicated in at least 10 countries around the world. And so I got to putting together a plan, strategy, and tactics to do it, which was I wanted to be on terrestrial radio. But to have a show, you got to have a show. And it was unlikely that I would just wake up one day and just say to folks, you know, I've never been on the radio before or had a show, but today's the day that I've decided that you should hire me to be your talk radio show host on your for-profit radio station because I say so. And that sounds good, but that's not really how it works. So I need to put some substance behind it, which was come up with a plan, which is find an internet radio station that would let me test and learn and figure it out. And so in March of 2015, I got together with Nick Papadopoulos and Tommy Spiro, and we just created a show and put it on an internet radio station and paid for airtime. And then every Tuesday, we would go back in there and produce and host a show live on internet radio and then turn that into a podcast. And we would do that week after 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 week. And next thing you know, it's 70-something episodes later. Substance. All of a sudden, it started to make sense. My friend said, you got to have a show to have a show. You got to have a show to have a shot. There's talk, and then there's substance. I was talking about having a show, but I didn't have a show. How am I going to be globally syndicated or nationally syndicated without a show? So I had a plan, get experience. I interned at a radio station in Philly. So now I'm doing two shows every week, after week, after week, after week, after week. Why? Because the substance of it all is you can talk about having something or you can do something about it. So I listened to my friend. I was like, he said I needed to have a show to have a show. I'm like, I'm going to have two shows to have a show. And so there was a plan, a strategy, there were tactics. So now I leveraged both of those shows to work on storytelling, to figure out how to compose a monologue, how to interact with callers. There's a plan now in place. I'm not just talking about it, I'm doing it, substantively doing it. I went and got a coach that helps work with folks in the media to leverage their expertise because, as I believe her name is Sheryl Sandberg says, we all need more support than we're getting. So I went out and got some more support because I needed to have a show, right? To have a show. Democrats out here talking about civility. I need them to go out and win some elections. Democrats talking about Brett Kavanaugh shouldn't be the next Supreme Court nominee. I need them to talk about how they're going to convince Senate Republicans to vote no for him instead of talking about civility. When I was coming up in corporate America, everybody was talking about the big deal, having this great commercial, this big ad campaign. Turns out what really mattered was how widely distributed was your product or service. How much money did you have to spend to raise awareness about it? Would the product deliver on its concept from a quality standpoint, experience standpoint? I'm talking about a show for 3 decades, but I didn't have one. And you got to have one to have one. So then fast forward to now, a year and a half ago, I got the Gregory Niesman Show on WHER 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, because I had a plan, some strategy, some tactics, some support. What are you out here doing for show, but still falling behind on the substance? What you out here talking about? Your version of civility instead of out here winning elections. You know, recently I was saying I was going to write a book. And it sounds good. I think I saw a stat the other day that at some point, maybe 60-70% of people have said that they are going to write a book. And I believe the research said that then only 1% of them actually do. And from a for show, versus substance. For the past couple months, I'll be honest, as I look back, I was in the for show, the style category, not the substance category. I'm like, yeah, everybody, I'm writing a book. Look at me. People be excited, like, oh, that sounds cool. You gonna write a book? I'm like, yeah, man, I'm gonna write a book. Be an author. Be a writer. I'm just gonna, you know, poof, just a book gonna appear out of nowhere. I'm gonna write a book. For sure. Sounds good. But what was the substance? It wasn't until literally this week that I realized that I was in the style category, which is cool. Figuring out like what the book might kind of be about, kind of gauging whether people had some interest in the topic that I want to talk about. And I'll give you some more details in a little bit. But what I realized is that I didn't really have any substance around. Like, what was my real strategy? What was my plan? What's my approach? When was I going to even finish it? And so finally this week, I moved from the style category over to the substance, which was, yeah, let me go research, how the heck do you write a book? You know, it's kind of like when people say they're about to go buy a new house or a condo or a co-op. And in my younger days, I was like, that sounds cool. Good luck. Let me know how I can help. And some of that's a bit of declaring kind of, there's some style there. Like, people are excited, like, cool, you're going to go buy a house. I'm happy for you. But then now I know the substance is, are you pre-approved? Do you know what your spending limit is? Do you have the amount of cash needed for the down payment in hand? That's the substance. It sounds good that you want to go get a place, and I think it's home ownership is awesome and can be part of someone's wealth strategy, but the substance is, you got your finances taken care of. And so I'm out here telling people I'm going to write a book, and then I realized that that's just a lot of talk. I hadn't really gotten down to the substance of, how am I going to write a book? When am I going to complete this book? And so finally this week, I did the research, and I'm like, oh, now I am really going to write a book. Because I got a plan. Got tactics. I now know, by doing some research, just literally figuring out a game plan to go from style to substance of, what's the premise of the book? Like, I can say I'm going to write a book, but what's the premise? What's the plot? What's the title? What's the outline? What's the table of contents? What I realized is that until I put those things in place, it'd be pretty hard to write a book. What I learned is you don't just sit down and start writing. There's a foundation that gets to be built. There's substance around it. There's having a daily word goal of how many word count that you want to write each day. Dedicating a certain amount of time every day at the same time, in the same place to write. Because you can't have a book if you don't write. And then having a date. What date am I going to complete this book by? You ever hear yourself or someone say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And they don't say by when, then they ain't really committed to it. So today I'm finally going to say the substance is, I am going to write my first book and be a published author with my book for sale by December 22nd, 2018. And the premise of that book is finding ourselves again. That's the premise. How do we find ourselves again? And the plot is my journey of pressing the reset button again and again, because I've pressed it a lot of times in my personal and professional life, and what I've learned about myself, about underdogs, and how we get our swagger back. And the title, The 10 Swagger Back Commandments, with a subtitle of how underdogs get their swagger back in life and in business. And a little bit of how the story will kick off is this idea of, we mostly start our life with a clean slate. Well, kind of. Well, we all mostly start out life with a clean slate of how we see ourselves in the world, that is. We're curious, playful, limitless about life. And then life happens. Well, a lot of life happens, actually. And all of a sudden, fast forward to when we become young adults, that clean slate is now cluttered with disappointment, frustration, self-doubt, anger. There is some excitement. Let's be clear. There is some excitement in those 20s. But then there's still that page is now cluttered with fear, anxiety. Well, I could keep going, but you get the point. And suddenly our once youthful energy, our very declarative spirit that we can be whatever we want, has now turned into a bad game of 21 questions. What happened to my dreams? Why didn't they tell me adulting was going to be so hard? Who have I become? What do I really want? How did I get here? And the book will be about the journey that I've gone on and that hopefully in some way you can relate to that you've gone on too, about starting out with such high hopes for things, getting off track along the way and feeling stuck, and then starting to rediscover your special stuff and getting your swagger back. And then kind of how that journey repeats itself time and time again, but we seem to hopefully get better at and better at it each time. And throughout the storytelling will be a description of these commandments, like change your address. It's one of the commandments. Who you're rolling with is another one. Reload your GPS is another one. Stop kidding around is another one. Puff, puff, out pass is another one. Go out and play is another one. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way, is another one. Cream, cash rules, everything around me is another one. Back to the lab, and then finally the remix of the 10 Swagger Back Commandments. So now, instead of saying I'm gonna write a book, I've actually put together the substance of what's the foundation of the book. What's the framework? Going to have a daily writing goal of at least 500 words a day. And doing that over 3 months will get me into the 40,000 word range, which gets you to a book around 100 to 150 words, which is a decent size nonfiction first book, which would allow me to be able to publish that by December 22nd, 2018. What's something that you've been talking about that it sounds good? You got the style, got the show, got the talk. But now, for it to become a reality, you get to figure out what your plan is. The substance. Let me know. As always, you can go to GregoryNeesmith.com and click on the Contact Me page. And share with me what's something you're shifting from talk to now adding the substance to it. You want to go get that new condo? Let me know how you're going about getting the finances straight and getting a plan to make it happen. You about to write that book? Hey, share with me your journey. I'm going to be sharing mine with yours. This is my first time doing this. I'm scared and excited all at the same time. But the good news is now I have a plan and I got a date. Some accountability buddies along the way, making it happen. I said also before we get out of here that we sprinkle in some good news, or at least sprinkle in some news about underdogs out there that are fighting for the underdogs, and like who are our underdogs of the month so far. I'm going to play two clips, and let me know if you can guess who these two underdogs are that have been in the news recently that I believe are worth shouting out. Here's underdog number one.
Michelle Obama, our beloved first lady that I care so much about, said, when they go low, we go high. And I went as high as I could.
Yes, she did. Do you know who that is? She did go as high as she could. In New York City, actually, she did that. It was on July 4th. I'll give you a hint. And then can you name this underdog?
Television right now. How are you feeling? words.
Nope.
I do not put this into words. I cannot believe these numbers right now, but I do know that every single person here has worked their butt off to change the future of the broken race. That's what I know. That's what I know. And that this victory belongs to every single grassroots organizer, every working parent, every mom, every member of the LGBTQ community. Every single person is responsible for this.
Can you guess who those two underdogs are? They're my underdogs of the month so far. The first in that clip talking about when they go low, we go high. She went as high as she could. She did go high. And that was Patricia Okumu. And apologies if I'm not pronouncing her name correctly. She was arrested on July 4th for climbing the base of the Statue of Liberty. She believes that black women have always been America's statues of liberty, and they've always been America's conscience and the push for the country to get it together. And she was climbing up this base of the Statue of Liberty to protest some of the actions that the Trump administration has been taking related to immigration and separating some of the folks who've crossed the border, separating kids from their parents, which is an act of terrorism and obviously creates much trauma in the lives of those kids for years and years to come. And so shout out to Patricia for that protest. And again, bringing awareness to something that still hasn't been fully taken care of yet. But I think it's always appropriate that we shout out folks who are out here fighting for underdogs, fighting for folks who feel like they have the odds stacked against them. And we appreciate Patricia out there doing what she did. And the second clip was that of someone from the New York City area, actually. And it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the 28-year-old newcomer to the political scene that I believe won the New York City District 14, I think it is, and I want to say the Queens area. She defeated Joseph Crowley, a dude who had been in office for years and some thought might be the next to replace Nancy Pelosi as the leader of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives. And she is like, nah, not having it. I'm going to run this grassroots campaign, get the people out. And an underdog that's now on top. She won the primary. And it's a district that is supposed to be very heavily leaned towards the Democrats. And so it is highly likely that since she won the primary recently, that she will win the election in November and become the representative of the 14th Congressional District in New York. Shout out to Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, bringing her authenticity and her compelling message and relatability to the folks there. And, you know, going on to get a win in. Shout out to the underdogs being on top. And we'll do that from time to time now going forward. Play a clip, see if you can guess who the underdog of the episode is. Folks out there in the world fighting for underdogs to get their swagger back. So shout out to Patricia and to Miss Alexandria. Can't believe it. Episode 80. We've done this 80 times together. Grateful. With that, as always, I'd like to say thank you to all the folks who chimed in on the phone lines and on the Facebook Live. Always appreciate you. To all the folks listening on their radio dials at 90.3 or on the World Wide Web, we appreciate you. And also shout out to Megan, my producer, who helps me get all the stuff ready for the show, and to Kayla, who does the editing and somehow every week makes me look and sound like I know what's going on. So I appreciate both of them. And as always, I leave you with my favorite quote. If you listen to the show before, you can say it along with me. Underdogs, can't nobody do it. And I mean, nobody can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.